Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, you are listening to another episode, a special of Africa on the Move. As your host, Brother Africa, we will continue our series on African Liberation Day 2014 and African unity. Without unity, there's not much that any group of people can do but to take the suffering or take the oppression that is being imposed upon them. But if you want to alleviate this oppression, the only one tool that we must have that is the key to our survival, and that tool is organization. Yes, I said organization. I didn't say unity. I said organization. Because organization presupposes unity. You must have organization first before you have unity. And the reason why that's really important is that if you are trying to organize over 1 billion people around the world to come together for one aim, one goal, one objective, one purpose, it becomes very difficult to corral the ideas and the energies of the people while some kind of form or some kind of structure. This organization is the tool that will allow you to position the people in a way where they can reach their full capacity as a unit, as a total, complete unit. It's an organization that will allow the people to begin to think as oneness, to act as oneness, and to be able to make analysis as oneness. So organization must come first. And in that, under this particular concept of organization, this is why we want to highlight and talk about the significance of African Liberation Day 2014. This year, African Liberation Day 2014 will be held in Washington, D.C., under the organization, direction, and sponsorship of the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. It will take place on May the 17th at the Festival Center, 1640 Columbia Road, Northwest Washington, D.C., from 2 to 5 p.m. This is your day. We're encouraging the community to come on out. For more information, we'd like to share with you that please go to their website, which is www.aaprp-gc.org. They will give you now the information on African Liberation Day, but give the information on the nature of the organization and history and the Pan-African movement and how you may fit in. So, right now we have two guests on the line who are going to be sharing their perspective on this theme of African Liberation Day 2014 and African unity. And they are Jabari Robinson, who is one of our youth organizers, and Katie Fulton, who has an organization called Save Our Son Defense Fund. We'll be talking to them about AID, the kind of work they're doing, what's going on in their lives, how we all can help one another. So right there, I'd like to welcome Brother Jabari. Welcome to Africa on the Move.
Thanks for having me.
And to Sister Katie, welcome to Africa on the Move.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I'll start with Jabari. I found this real interesting. When we often talk about African Liberation Day, one of the things we talk about this question of culture, understand the importance of culture, understand the importance of historically how people have done things that have made them successful, how people have done things where they can claim ownership to, how people have done things where other people cannot say you cannot do. So as a young youth, African youth leader, Jabari, culturally speaking, what kind of thing you see that alienates our people today, particularly our young people, and how do you think we can best address it?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned this aspect of culture because, truthfully, given our history, culture has always been a part of us because for every important milestone in our life, there's some type of cultural element that goes with it, from celebrating a baby being born to celebrating the many different milestones that come to it. Because, you know, it's something about music that's always with us, even though our body has a natural rhythm as well. So I would definitely say that you can see the performing arts is definitely relevant when you're talking about what really interests young people, because, you know, 9 times out of 10, you ask people what do they want to be when they grow up. You know, they always say some form of an entertainment. It might be a singer, a musician, actress, you know, sports player. And the thing is, there's nothing wrong to ascribe to those goals, but given the potential that we have elsewhere, we have to understand that it's always good to have a backup plan in case that doesn't go through, because there's so many skills that you can get pursuing becoming an athlete or another type of entertainment that you can't take for granted that it's just going to help you succeed in one area.
Okay, in terms of this question of popular culture that we see all around us, do you think this is the kind of culture that would be beneficial in terms of dealing with the ills of our people at this point in time?
Well, the thing people have to understand, if it's popular culture, there's always going to be an agenda involved. And you're going to constantly see certain images that get people to think a certain way about certain perspectives, because that's why you see the advertising industry is continuing to boom. And case in point, look at the Super Bowl. The cost of doing Super Bowl ads increases every year, because that's a way to have a mass audience where you can introduce them to various products and services over and over again, year after year. You just find new ways of doing it. And that's one way to, given the instability of our economy, if you keep putting the image of something in front of somebody, they're going to feel compelled that they need it.
Okay, Sister Katie, just give me your overall synopsis of how you view this question of culture as it historically relates to us as a people and what's going on today among our people, particularly the youth.
Yes, as the brother said, I think that culture is critical because it is within a culture that one becomes identified, and sometimes it's misrepresented. I think that the young people today really and truly are reaching and searching for a sustainable culture that they can feel comfortable in. Many of them are conflicted about what culture is. Usually, if they can identify with someone who looks like them, understands them, reflects their goals and their objectives, they're very comfortable in that particular culture. And as the brother said, you really and truly do want to give them a broad perspective, not just focus on fame and fortune, but be able to sustain some disappointments. Things don't always work out the way you might plan it to work out for you. And if you are not prepared, you may not have any hope for survival. So regardless of what your plans might be laid out, if it doesn't work out, you have to be able to navigate through the system and be able to survive.
Okay. Let's look at the state of culture more critically in terms of various forms of principles and values that may have an impact on the behavior of our people. If you are a psychiatrist and you begin to look at an individual, a young man who may say he's 15, 16, 17 years old, and he ended up committing an act, a real brutal act. He ended up committing a brutal act against his own family members, let's say his mother. And we're talking about the African family. What do you think were some of the factors or conditions that are now beginning to make our people, young and old, but right now my emphasis is on the youth, to act out in the way that historically African people have never done? Years ago, we would never conceive the idea of killing our parents or robbing a woman 87 years old. You know, what do y'all think, what factors do you think contribute to taking in these kind of behavior that would cause our youth today to act so non-compassionate? They don't connect to people who look like them and who are actually biologically, in many cases, a part of them. How do you get a human being to internalize ideas or values that will allow them to even think that way, let alone act that way? Katie, I'll start with you first on that one.
I think that from the time a young person comes into the world, we are given an opportunity to shape some of their values and some of their concepts and identities. Unfortunately, parents, families, loved ones are competing with environmental factors. When you have games and the media and you have others in the community that have an influence upon your loved ones, especially the young children, you are competing against those entities. So you want to find a way to say to the young people who are in your family or in your love life or in your community that your value, you are valued in our lives. You are important to us. We respect you and we love you and we need you. It comes right down to even smoking and drinking or doing drugs. If they have friends who are doing drugs and they're associating with people who are doing things that are not family-oriented, you're competing with those odds. So you want to constantly stay in communication with them. Don't just take it for granted and say that, well, I don't tell you that I love you every day. You should know I love you every day. You should know that. Don't assume anything. Say it. I love you. I really do need you. I respect you. I wish the best for you. Say it anyway. Because when they hear those words, that helps to compete against what they are facing when they leave your environment. Because we are constantly competing with the environmental factors. They say, well, I want to smoke. I want to do marijuana. I want to do cocaine. I want to do this or that because everybody else is doing it. So you're saying, well, because everyone else is doing it doesn't make it right. You are different. You don't have to fit in with them. We can help you. We need you in our circle, not in theirs.
That's what, you know, in listening to you and that presentation, there's one question I would like to ask you, and we'll get your response to it. For some reason or another, many African families in society, it seems to be very difficult for us to verbalize our expression and feelings toward each other. For example, if we say, I love you, many people say we are acting European or acting white, and our people don't identify with that. How do you explain that perception of we having a hard time recognizing, accepting the verbal expression, using the word, I love you, because it has always been associated with the idea of this is what Europeans do, because this is what we always see on TV when they show up in a European family, acting that way. They be saying, we're acting white. How do you address that? How do you respond to that criticism or that demeanor?
Yes, I understand what you're saying, and I appreciate your point. There's often a disconnect, and there's often an indication that what is appropriate and what is right has to be white. That's not true. That individual is misinformed. Because if you go back and look at history, you will see and you will understand that people of color have always been able to show love and show respect and caring. It is only in recent times that some individuals have elected to misinform or give you the impression that people of color don't love, don't accept, don't respect. That's not true at all. We have feelings. We love. We respect. We support. And I think that misconception is what you see in the mass media. You don't see it portrayed enough in a positive light. So that if someone comes out and says to their family members, I need you. I respect you. They say, oh my goodness, you're acting so white. Where did they get that from? What gave them that construct? What happened? That's a defining beauty. For years and years, it was assumed that if you didn't have blonde hair and blue eyes, you weren't beautiful. James Brown came along and said, black is beautiful. So you see, your construct has to do with a lot of your environment. It helps to shape your mentality and your paradigm. So when you know right from wrong, you do that which is right. It doesn't have to be white. It just has to be right. Children feel the same. They all respect, love, warmth, protection. You don't have to tell them. even a child who cannot yet verbalize understands whenever you are giving them love. You're not abusing them. And I think that this is something our people, black people, want to hold on to. Don't let someone distort your views about love and your respect for your family. That is a natural.
Okay, we'd like to just let our listening audience know that you listen to Africa on the Move. We are doing a continuation of our series in dedication and celebration of Africa Liberation Day 2014. For those who don't know, this is a history, this is an institution that has been in existence for over 56 years. It was started back at the first independent states of Africa conference in 1958, April 15 in Ghana. From May the 25th to May the 25th, June 63, at the founding of the Organization of African Unity, they changed it from Africa Freedom Day to African Liberation Day, and been in existence ever since, and it is growing, and people are celebrating it all throughout the world. What we're doing right now, we're taking certain aspects of this institution and trying to apply it to different sectors of our society and our lives. We're talking in general, trying to examine a little bit about this question of culture, because when you come to African Liberation Day, this is one of the things this institution represents. It represents the best of African culture and African people. It represents the necessity for people who bond together, come together, who have a tradition, a common history, a common destiny, a common struggle, to fight together as one. We'd like to let our audience know that in the next 5 minutes, bear with us, caller. We see you on the line. We'd like to have your views and your comment on these questions and others. The number to call in is at 323-679-0841, 232-679-0841. Jabari, can you respond to the last statement where I asked Ms. Fulton to, how do you deal with this issue where our youth can look at an elderly or can look at their parents and kill them and have no sympathy? What has been the sociological factors or conditions that have gotten us away from this concept of understanding not only who we are, but how we should treat each other? I mean, something must terribly have happened in society where the child that you will give birth to would turn around to...
I have a very good reference point to address your question, show host. And not too long ago, I'm sure you all remember this, there was the infamous Dorito commercial where the son felt threatened when the mom's boyfriend came over because the son grabbed what could have potentially been his stepdad and said, two things you don't mess with. You don't mess with my mom and you don't mess with my Doritos. And that's showing you the disconnect now because this understanding of family as we traditionally know it, because, you know, we live by the proverb, it takes a village to raise a child. But, you know, that's a big disconnection now because when you're talking about single parents and when you're talking about a single parent relationship, the whole dynamic changed because a lot of times there's hostility when a step-parent may come into the picture, or if the parent just straight away tried to come back into the picture, that child isn't quick to warm up to them because they're saying, wait a minute, how do I know I can trust you because you turn your back on me? And because of that, they go through life with a chip on their shoulder, and anybody that tries to get too close, they're being hostile rather than trying to take the time to listen to that person, give them some nuggets of wisdom to help them come along, because just because one person turned their back on them doesn't mean that everybody will.
Okay, excellent point. Okay, we're going to go to one of our other guests who have joined us. We have with us Sister Sabrina Green, who is an organizer for Friends and Family of Mumia Abu-Jamal. Sister Bruce Sabrina, welcome to Africa on the Move. Can you hear us, Sabrina?
Greetings, League, and greetings to everybody. I'm glad to be there. As we know, yesterday was the anniversary of the May 13 bombing that took place in Philadelphia. Very infamous because of the tragedy where 11 men, women, and children lost their lives through no fault of their own. False accusations that were put against them, and the police used heavy force, meaning they got authorization of the government to use a C4 bomb to be dropped on, and hence having them killed. Now, take note that they were alive some alive and able to come out of the building that was burning. And as I was told by with Ramona Africa, who is one of the survivors of that that took place, and as well as the youth Birdie, that she was able to grab him. And there is a movie called Let the Fire Burn that a professor at George Washington University did, where he took documentation of what the city and other means of archives had of that situation and put it into a movie that made a film, award film. And the police docs tried to say that they rescued the child, but it was Ramona that had rescued him. And when they put Ramona in custody, that's when they came up with the lie saying that they had rescued Birdie. But Ramona had told me that she remembered that there was an opening and a lot of smoke, and she assumed the rest of the family were following the direction that she and Birdie were going. But instead, they were going much further down the alley, which was quite visible to the police that were up in the row houses surrounding that alley, and they shot at them. And matter of fact, it was unexplained of the fact that how the children that were killed had gunfire bullets that were in them, which obviously came from the police weapons. And, you know, they tried to make it seem like no move may have done it or that they burned in the fire. So I wanted to point out that that discrepancy there on that. So it is an anniversary that MOVE do every year to commemorate, because these the people, if they had survived it being children, would have been adults by now. And Sue Africa lost her only son there, Tomasco, there. And it, in that film, Let the Fire Burn, he's very much documented there. And it's got some good representation of Father Washington, who points out that these are humans that he knew. And so despite the fact that the police trying to villainize them as being animals, the key point where you said there about what is happening with the youth, there is one surviving grace that is happening that everybody needs to get on the move with, and that's Dr. Umar Johnson. His lectures for the youth, for adults. He's in position now of trying to make his own academy. A matter of fact, and I believe at this point even taking donations for the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey School that he's going to put in place. One that will be for the youth up in Philadelphia, and I understand that he may have the possibility of acquiring a HBCU of Virginia, St. Paul's College. He's in the works of trying to make that happen. And so if anybody knows anything about Dr. Umar in his book, it's very uplifting in telling people what they need to do to move forward as far as society. Babylon in this country has put measures in place to take back. Unfortunately, the move is mobilization is being killed, you know, damaged. That the things that were put in place, we are no longer seeing it in place. So it's wonderful to hear good news that he has this in place and is willing to do the work to put it in there for families, children, and especially families that have special needs, where, you know, they're telling families that to keep their youth in school, that they have to take these shots, take this medicine and all that, where he proves in his book, Psychoacademic Holocaust, the Special Education and ADHD Wars Against Black Boys. This is a book all should read, whether you've got children or not, to find out what is society, what is happening there, and what can be done. So I'd encourage people to get this book. And, you know, for them and their families, and even if you're not a family, because I'm, you know, 56 years of age, I read this book and find this book a lot of informative. And every time I go to these lectures, I'm learning something new and what he's presenting there. So he's in very much in high demand. And he's also a relative of the Frederick Douglass descendant, and also being with the member of the UNIA, the philosophy of Marcus Garvey, so very strong-minded, and this is something we can move forward here. Another point I want to say here is this is the last day of the petition, online petition that we put in place to John Kerry about the death of Marcus Garvey, of Malcolm Shabazz. Malcolm Shabazz, the grandson of Malcolm X, was killed last year, May 9, 2013. And the online change.org petition expires today. So please, people, you can go there to change.org, Google search there for John Kerry, or even Google putting Malcolm Shabazz's name with John Kerry. The petition will come up. You'll see more information under the Malcolm Shabazz Memorial page, which is the Facebook page. It has the information, and it also has the petition link there. I have a paper petition that we put in that are put in place because we have not gotten an answer from John Kerry. So I delivered on May 9, presented to the White House 1,000 signatures that I had sustained, been able to collect so far. The White House said because of security measures they couldn't take it, so I put them in the mail. So we're still continue to collect signatures. And the pilgrimage that's to take place at next Monday to the gravesite of Malcolm X. From Baltimore, there will be a bus. I understand from D.C., the New York area will be buses. And so I'll be collecting signature as well there for those people if they can make it to that. But if not, then please go to the page, Malcolm Shabazz Memorial page, Facebook, Malcolm Shabazz Memorial Facebook page, and you'll see the petition there and the language there. Or you can even write a letter yourself to President Obama saying you want that investigation. We want that investigation because, quite clearly, Malcolm was lured to Mexico. We know in February 2012 he was stopped from going to Iran for a conference on racism. And despite the fact that a former senator and actor and also went there and had no problems, no issues. And so we know he was being targeted by some people that are claimed to be a monitor of Shia Muslims in the Bay Area. That was in 2010. And they filmed him doing a presentation at the Peace Walk and gave their own analyzation, which was not favorable because they looked at he was for Hezbollah, and they did not like that. So they many ways we see he was targeted. So we are still pursuing with answers on that. And then for more information about with MOVE that I mentioned there, there is the Free the MOVE 9 blog spot where you'll find lots of information there.
Okay, Sabrina, we're going to stop you right here. We have another call on the line. We'll bring in that caller, 1900. Caller 1900. Welcome to Africa on the Move. Your question and comment so far as we commemorate African Liberation Day 2014 and express the necessity for African unity. Your question and comment, please. Call 1900.
One ready for the revolution from Savannah, Georgia, Brother Odinga.
Hey, how you doing, Brother Odinga? Good, good.
Revolution and praising God. My brother, I think I just want to say first, the RTEC, Blue Education Journal, totally supports African Liberation Day by D.C. and the emphasis on crushing the racist, vicious, fascist American police state and calling for unity on that aspect. And we will send in a statement soon on that point. My brother, the sister said something about love. I don't know if I'm still with you.
Yeah, you're still with us. Yes, you're still with us.
Let me say this about the love thing. As a minister, as an elder, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. And when the word was made flesh, if you know your Christian history properly, it was African flesh. So love started in Africa. So this nonsense about love being European has some contradictions. One, love started in Africa. Two, there has been aspects of love even among white people, so they're wrong. Let me give you one example of a white man who loved. Fidel Castro. He loved Africa so much that he gave his troops and his blood. There's an excellent example of love, and love is expressed in all cultures. But if you really love your people, you'll join an organization. And if you really, really, really love your people, a revolutionary organization. In fact, and I'll end with this, if you're not in an organization, especially an organization, you really don't love your people. Love is an action word. It's a particular word that in English comes as a noun and a verb, but its most powerful aspect comes as a verb, is action. If you love your people, join an organization. If you really, really, really love your people, a revolutionary organization. All forward to the All African Revolutionary Party, GC, forward to African Liberation Day.
Brother Dingle, are you still there?
Okay. Yes, sir.
I want you to hold on for a few minutes, because I would like to come back to you, because you have a very unique history of struggle, and we want to share information with our people about African
Praise
liberation.
God, boy.
And yes, that this is what African Liberation Day is all about. So will you just please hang on? All right. Now, I'd like to raise this with Sister Katie and Brother Jabari, and then other two can chime in on this issue. And we're talking about culture. We're talking about this question looking at the youth. And there's one thing I think in terms of when you observe the nature of the capitalist system, particularly this one. When you look at the nature of the capitalist system, it seems to value youth very little. It has no respect and very... its emphasis on the youth is not really necessarily a positive one. And what I'm saying to you is it seems to have no problem of taking that youth at a very, very young age, very innocent, and send them off the wall for no reason at all. When we talk about the youth, when we talk about making money, and the bottom line is making a profit, they seem to have no commitment on ensuring that the youth are properly educated and conscious in terms of what is their responsibility to humanity. Many people argue that this culture here is anti-youth. How do you view this system, the capitalist system, when it comes to placing value on the youth, Sister Katie?
I think that it is precious to have the young in the midst and be able to communicate with them and shape some of their views. I think that because they are very impressionable, a lot of individuals will give them the very distorted views about life and about survival. Therefore, we have an obligation, we have a moral commitment to embrace our young people and try very hard to give them the foundation that they need to embrace the world and to embrace those individuals who might come into their lives to distort and to destroy. I think that we have talked about this many times before. I have seen the young people, many of them in education, many of them are geared to music, to sports, but beyond that, they do have a brain, and they do think and reason well. I think that society has given the young people a disregard in the sense that they assume that they can be manipulated easily. That's not true. That's not true at all. Some of our best thinkers are among the young people. Some of our best contributors are among the young people. And I have seen, as Sister Sabrina Green pointed out, what target looks like. When there's a young person who is targeted that they might think will be successful in the future, they will seize to undermine, to distort, and to destroy. I'm living it. I understand it. I didn't think in my wildest dreams that I would be 60-plus years of age and see that my son has become a target. Yes, he has. He has been targeted, and they are trying to destroy him. So we are praying each day for his survival. We've been bouncing back and forth to court, and he has been facing the judge trying to explain something that seems unreal. Douglas County in Colorado has seized his computer and brought charges based on what they said was on his computer. They said, well, this young man graduated from high school, graduated from college. He's not in trouble. So we're going to see if we can use his computer to bring some trouble to him. And that's what they're doing. They're seizing his computer, and they're saying that information found on his computer can send him to prison for years. Then they said, well, I have no idea what you're talking about. My son was not home when they came into my house and took the computers away. He was not home when they came in and took his telephone away. But they have targeted him, and they have seized all the information that they think will give him access to the world. They don't want you to know what has happened to us in Colorado. They don't want you to know what Target looks like. But take a picture of my son, and you'll see what Target looks like. A young black man who has never had any problem with the law, who has never caused problems for anybody. They have seized his computer, and they're building a case against him based on the computer. And they said, well, can we see what you see? They said, no, you cannot see what we're looking at. This is not a terrorist case. We're not an enemy of the state. But they're saying, we can look at these pictures on this computer, but you can't see them. And I'm saying, well, you know, we need some help here. We need a lawyer. We need a good lawyer. We need someone who has a head and a heart, who understands that if this can happen to us in Colorado in 2013, in 2014, it can happen to any state in America. So we need to be aware that the young people might be a threat more than a problem. I think that we need to embrace them and support them and try very hard to guide them in the right direction.
Now,
if you'd like to know more about our case, I encourage you to email me, saveoursons2013@gmail.com. I'll be glad to share some of our experiences with you. It's real, it's painful, it's dangerous. And yes, we are fighting for our lives. And we're fighting for our reputation and our freedom in Colorado.
Katie, I did want you to talk just a little bit more about the conditions that the young man has to function under. And just let the people know, because one of the things in terms of having you on tonight is just to be a concrete example in terms of why it's important for us to begin to come together as a people, where they cannot just target individual people at will, particularly African youth, because this is going on all around the world. And one of the tools that they are using that our people need to be aware of is the computer. We recognize there are all kinds of things that they can do or send to a computer and give it the illusion that if you are doing it. And it sounds like this may have happened to your son. So can you just talk just a little bit more about those conditions and you know, how the people can help you? Because this is what African liberation is about. Not so much helping our individuals, but creating a climate where we all can help each other, where this whole question of attack against one is attack against all. And we must come to see that we are all one family. So can you just talk, or just let the audience know just a little bit more about the case and what is going, what conditions you are going under?
Yes, it has affected our lives in a way in which we never suspected that it would. My son has used the computer. He grew up in the computer age. I did not. I grew up in an age in which computers was not even a part of daily life. But now that it is, when he was in school, he would register for his classes using the computer. He would register and he would do his research using the computer. He would communicate using the computer through email and other forms of technology. And it's never been a problem on the college campus or any of the environment in which he lived. But this past April 2013, the Douglas County Sheriff's Department said that they were online just surfing and looking, and they found that some information was coming into our computer which we had no knowledge of. So they took the computer and said that they would have to keep the computer and have their computer do a forensic search. And we could not have the computers back. We did not know anything at all about what they were talking about. I may have found that our server, Comcast, did send us an email saying that it appeared as though our computer was being used as a mule, a bot. I didn't know what that was either. So that indicates that at some point in time, individuals can invade your computer system and make it appear as if you are using it and you're not. You cannot even be home when it's being done to you. And I'm not sure when, how, or who, but I do know that we have no knowledge of what they're talking about or what they're basically charges on. As I've said before on your program, just a few days before the sheriff department invaded our home with a pass key, the maintenance man who lived on property, worked on property for 8+ years, up and left in the middle of the night. He left, took his family, his pet, plant, everything is gone. And we did not know if they were coming into our home, but we suspected that someone was coming into our home, possibly using our computer without our knowledge. There's so many questions that we don't have answers to. But I do know at this point that my son is fighting for his freedom, and he's trying to defend himself. And we do need help. We need legal representation. We need individuals to understand that your computer can be used against you, and they can't invade your computer without your knowledge. And in Colorado, the way the laws are written in a way such that they can bring charges against you that you cannot defend yourself against, or you may not even understand. So we are dealing with a lot of issues right now. We encourage you to pay attention to the case with my son's computer and what's happening in Douglas County, Colorado. We encourage you to inquire. We encourage you to email us or call us. Again, you can email me, saveourson2013@gmail.com. I will be glad to share information. Or you can call 720-499-5106, and I'll be glad to share information with you there also. Any help is appreciated.
Okay. You to call, y'all. We are at war, and it's taking different kind of forms. This is affecting all sectors of our people. But one of the questions we must ask is, how are they able to carry out their oppression? And this year, African Liberation Day, they have adopted the theme, Smash Neocolonist Intelligentsia, the true
Amen.
Face of the counter-revolution. In terms of looking at their quote, to Brother Jabari and Dino Dingle, and Abe Askin shine in on it. How do y'all view this whole question of the role of the intelligentsia, the neocolonial intelligentsia? How do you address that question as relates to the conditions of African people here and abroad? Brother Jabari?
Well, that means that nothing is off limits in terms of maintaining the white supremacist doctrine that many black people fall victim to on a daily basis all over the world. Because just as the example was shared in regards to computers, you have computers now. You have drone technology that can spy on you because you have drones that fly around like insects and you don't even know they're there. The cameras can be installed in the streetlight. They're constantly reinforcing negative imagery on TV. Nothing is off limits. It's a propaganda battle, and we have to be prepared for that. We have to be aware of it, and we can't live it now like it doesn't exist.
Brother Dingo, your response to the theme?
Okay. Yes, sir. First, let me say, let's get some clarity on intelligentsia. I know PhDs that are stupid as hell. So degrees don't determine your intelligence or intelligentsia. Fannie Lou Hamer, who never got a high school degree, was quality. That is the conscious applicant who will seek to teach himself to read and learn and study and research like Malcolm X did. So the intelligentsia covers all strata of people, the unemployed, the non-GED, the GED, all that, those who are constantly using education, as Nkrumah said, to advance society. That's the intelligentsia. And the constant intelligentsia must keep up its effort to emphasize the growing American police state. And this is why AAPRP... I don't know what the noise means. Theme is so significant to emphasize the growing facet of American police state. And this let me
you'll see that Germany, a capitalist country, Italy under Franco, a capitalist country, Japan, under the country, when capitalism gets in crisis, when the political education no longer works, it can't fool a lot of more people, they resort to brute force. That's what America is coming to, because American capitalism is about to be seriously destabilized because of its own constitutions, like Malcolm said, it's so corrupt, it has a seed of its own destruction within it, and because of the conscious organization by the intelligentsia throughout the classes, particularly among the mass, the unemployed, and the working class, and others, the conscious element, as Cabal said, who have portrayed class suicide, have committed to educate the people. Second, let me say this. If you are intelligent, you will join an organization fighting for the people. I'm tired of people coming to African Liberation Day and seeing it as a concert. That is, I got a good, it was good, it was hip, then I go back home and you don't join an organization. You ain't doing a damn thing really to help African people. If you understand African Liberation Day, it is the time to rededicate yourself to being in an organization. If you really love your people, you're doing the organization. Love is an action word. So I was going to say, the role of the intelligentsia of all strata is to involve themselves in the masses of the people, looking at their particular contradictions, raising that contradiction so they can see that it's about capitalism. And for African people, the highest aspiration of that resistance and that forward march is the total liberation and unification of Africa under socialism and working towards that end. Love your people. Understand African Liberation Day, join the organization. Do not leave ALD, not being an organization. Because if you did, all you did was perpetrate a fraud and come to a concert. Praise God. Honor the people.
Thank you, my brother. Sister Sabrina, in terms of when we talk about culture, in terms of when we talk about culture, we also talk about a way of doing things, a way of thinking, same principles and values. We know one of the major principles and values when you look at African culture, when it flourished the most, there was values based upon collectivism, there were values based upon egalitarianism. These was kind of values that flourished when Africa was at its best. Now, if you look at the value in terms of the values that we imbue in the society and the capitalist society, do you ever think that the people will ever be able to overcome this issue of racism, xenophobia, and all these organisms and the capitalist system that exists as of today?
Well, we can if we get back to re-education. Let's look at this. In places like Cuba, Venezuela, countries in Africa and the Caribbean, African Liberation Day is a very significant time frame. It's one of re-education and stuff. In fact, in Venezuela, the whole month is Afro-Descendants Month, where they took that name from with the Conference on Racism that happened in South Africa and said that us in this hemisphere, in the diaspora, we should be calling each other Afro-Descendants. So where the places that I speak of, they have that looking into culture, looking back about the presence of Africa, and even in with Cuba, Colombia, and that we're, and even Venezuela, where they see light-skinned Latinos, they identify the fact that they are African, you know. And then if you go to, you know, other regions there, you see those that are just looking and having the culture very much like that of in the continent of Africa. One of the key people that we organize in Mexico, primarily, we got introduced because of the tragedy that happened with Malcolm, is a Afro-Mexican who's Haitian, who migrated from Haiti because of the conditions there, and found an organization called CCDNAM. They are, as African Afro-Mexicans, you assume that they may be that they're, where you can assume that they're mulatto, light-skinned or that. They are dark-skinned. They're brothers from the continent of Africa that make their home in Mexico, and seeing of racism that is there have been combating it. In fact, in 2011, they had a brother, Nigerian, that was killed by the police. They happened to see that as an anniversary date when Malcolm was killed, and unite it together and organize and make an issue in that. And this year, this past Friday, they had a conference of you know, in Malcolm's name, topic of racism, where they have put out you know, that information that's Wilner Metlis on Facebook, and then they took up the issue of the Dominican Republic, about racism of Haitians of being in that country and facing racism there, where they're not considered citizen and they're not allowed to be citizen. And so, you know, in those places that I mentioned, it is a big tradition from when it was from Malcolm X's time frame when he went to the continent and saw the recognition of African Liberation Day, which I understand what the thinking of that day came from, what, with Nkrumah? Am I wrong in saying that?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, his mindset of seeing it where, you know, it was another name. And so, you know, it seems like in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, maybe in the 90s, it was a big thing in here in Babylon, United States. But I can say this, going to other countries, it's a significant event. You have seen, like, when we have been at the Cuban Interest, where they have a program and acknowledge in Cuba. And the same thing with, like, you know, the countries that are just mentioned here. So we're the one that are in prison that don't realize that we need to acknowledge it the way that we can in the mainstream. And that's where we have to get that re-education on there.
You know, at a certain point in time of a people historical development and just recognizing human beings and their behavior, we know nationalism has a role, has a place in the people history and development. But at this point in time, when someone look at this whole question of development in the context of this particular society, most people often equate that with integration. I'd like to get everybody's take, starting with Sister Katie. When we say making progress, does that mean that integration was a successful experiment? What kind of impact, positively or negatively, at this point in time, if you had to write your history on this whole notion of so-called integration as it relates to the best interests of African people in this country? Sister Katie, are you there?
Yes, sir. I think that when you talk about integration.
Yes. How do you view that? Has it been a positive or negative results or impact based upon this whole conception of our ultimate goal was to have freedom and liberation? As of today, based upon going through this process, give me your assessment of it. Did we make a right decision, or did we even make that decision?
There are many today who would look back on it and say that integration was not that positive. They will say that integration was not really as positive as they had hoped it would be. It has had some negative results. Now, see, I can compare and contrast because I'm old enough to remember going to a segregated school. It was an all-black school. All my teachers were black, the principal black, the janitor, everyone was black. We had to read from the books that the white students had discarded. Our books were old and raggedy, but nevertheless, we learned from it. I have lived long enough to see integration and the demand for integration. And I have seen the positive side and the negative side. I have seen in integrated schools in which the black students were usually targeted as being learning disabled. And they were put in special classes, not able to compete and keep up. And I didn't understand that until I came to know that it had to do with money. So if you were in a classroom that's supposed to be integrated, and the teacher doesn't have the skill or the talent or the time or heart to tap into that child's potential to see what the aptitude is and to understand that they might be learning differently, that they may be caught in a box in which they are forever labeled as special needs student. That is one of the disadvantages. I have also seen, and you have also, that many of the people who think that they have gotten over really have not. I don't have to tell you about the sports arena. You can see. Now we're talking all about the NFL, and we're talking about the NBA. You still don't have any people who are in position of power with money, who can make a difference, who are of a color. The owners in the NBA that they're talking about over and over again are white males, predominantly white males. This is not by accident. This is by design. They know exactly what they're doing. They know how to phase you out rather than phase you in. The job market is tight now. Chances are, if you have a degree or not, you could still be the last to hire and the first to fire. All they have to say is that we've done an audit, and the audit tells us that we've got to make some changes, and we have to lay you off. So you still have a lot of people of color who are still without. So, again, integration is a misconception. It's not real. And we're not truly integrated until we're given equal opportunity. And that's not happening.
Okay. Brother Odingo, what is your position on integration?
Yes, sir. Hello?
Yes, what is your position on integration? Has it been an experiment that been successful, or has it been something as an obstacle in terms of not allowing African people to reach their full potential at this stage of our development?
In terms of your question, and let me preface this, I am a minister and an organizer, so don't get this twisted, but the hell with integration. We don't want to be integrated. We want to be free. There's a total difference. If you look at our history, which unfortunately, a lot of our people haven't. We have materialistically produced more before the 60s, before integration, than we did with integration. As John Henry Clark would say, we have to start thinking like an independent people. Let me give you an example, Lee, and listeners. Boko Haram. I have sent out some information on that, right? Because they're either working with the U.S. or helping the U.S. by giving the U.S. an excuse to invade. I've talked with people. The first thing they say, what is our government doing? The hell with the American government. It ain't going to do nothing. Stop depending on your oppressor. Integration ain't the way to go. The way to go? Organization. And I'm going to repeat it again. If you love your people, if you understand African Liberation Day, if you're seriously upset with things, get an organization, particularly a revolution organization. If you don't, don't take this hard, people. You bullshitting. You playing. Or you confused. Only organization can stop bad organization. To end with a quote from the great revolutionary pan-Africanist Kwame Ture, power comes from the organized masses. Praise God, make revolution, join the organization, people.
Yes, Sabrina. What is your take on this question of integration?
Okay. Well, with integration being a military brat, I was got the opposite of receiving of because that was the opportunity that my parents were able to leave this country, 60s, 70s, up until like in the 80s, and go over and live in Germany. Germany being as a black person than being before where we were, not so much of, yes, it was a military presence, but African Americans were not the many. And luckily, since my father was a commanding officer I was able to, you know, be where, live where the office was quarters. Matter of fact, we lived in a house that was like where Hitler had put his best officers, which I didn't know until, you know, later on what it was. But racism, I did not know. Only time we knew it was when we came back to visit our family in Alabama for R&R and surprising situations. But even when I did experience it in Germany, I didn't know what the word nigger was. I had to ask my mother whether she wanted to know where I got heard it from. It was some people from Kentucky that said, no nigger can outdance my brother. And only because my father was a commanding officer did their family have to apologize with that. I learned that later on. But, you know, so we seeing that. But, however, I could say this. Not experiencing racism over there at that point there and coming back here made me to have an attitude that, look, Europe is whites of this country consider their motherland, supposedly, or their land where they came from. If I didn't experience racism over there, I certainly wasn't going to tolerate it over here. So that's been my way of looking at that. Later on, I had the opportunity to work with Dr. James Foreman and ask him questions about what they did. Now, I believe quite strong in the philosophy of Malcolm X, and where he said there should not have been any integration, because what happened there, they bargained, and unfortunately, when they bargained, the means of integration of this country was having for a different community to take advantage of it. We did not get the advantage of it. So just as the brother mentioned, we should have sustained and organized and got in our own means, like what it was with Marcus Garvey, our own business and everything in place, pretty much like it was like it is in Venezuela. And now we see the U.S. is trying to go out there and capitulate on that, to put out misinformation like they did with Libya against Gaddafi and everything to villainize Maduro. And so we need to re-educate on there. Last Friday, I was at the White House to take a picture for the Mexicans with the sign for that I had for demanding investigation for Malcolm. I was horrified because the opposition of Venezuela were there, and a number. I'm not going to even say what the number was, but I would say it was a significant number. And so in Venezuela, they recognized their presence of Africans there. We have got to take a stand for them, because basically what they're trying to do is put sanctions in place and do a takeover like they did with Afghanistan, like Libya, and such like that. We cannot let that happen. And they're also even trying to do that with Cuba. There's some measures that have been put in place. And so, look, we've gone backwards as far as with the movement here in this country. And so those places that I just mentioned, we certainly don't want to see it go back. With Citgo Oil, that is where they give resources where they can help us here in this country with education, with the university there in Chapel Hill, with heating oil for the underprivileged and such like that. So I ask, and I want to throw in there, if we're serious about African Liberation Day and how Cuba went and helped, including the Cuban Five, in the needs of Africa there, we've got to get more serious in, yes, turning things around in this country, but also to advocate for those that have been advocating for us all along.
Let's stay on the line of thought, Sister Sabrina. We know that when we talk about African Liberation Day, they have a set of principles that direct its actions. Now, one of the beautiful aspects of African Liberation Day is it comes together and talks about the international struggles and how they all related. For example, at African Liberation Day, you will often hear and meet people from the Palestinian movement. You'll come and meet and hear people from the Irish movement. You come and hear and meet people who are struggling down in Central and South America and their various struggles. Why should African people be interested in these struggles? Sabrina?
for the reason I just said there. For example, some of the Cuban Five, when it came to with Angola, with Che Guevara, with Cuba, when it saw the need of getting apartheid rid of in South Africa, and so many other places there. And then even, you know, with Venezuela, with Hugo Chavez, when he said, yes, we have resources here, what did he do? He made his ambassadors have a presence in Africa so that they can do what is necessary to help those countries there. Not seeing that they're in a position like the U.S. or we strong handle you, you know, with colonialism and everything. And a good example like with condescending, I call her condescending Rice, with how what she did with Nigeria. You know, we are talking about the boogeyman Boko Karambe or whatever and all this stuff. What about what she did in the 1990s where she can and seized the Ogoni people, their land, and Kinsarawiwa was hung eight times, name it, eight times that they strung him up and hung him. And I had a chance to meet his brother, Dr. Owens Wiwa, you know. So the struggle for the oil, raping Africa for the oil, which apparently now the dollar, the currency does not mean anything. It's what is the oil reserves around the world. That's where capitalism wants to try to do a takeover. And so with that, you know, as we got the ugly screen of like, okay, they're hauling the girls. Right in Washington, D.C., it's been missing children. I think the last time I was on, I did the show with you talking about with Relisha Rudd, the missing girl, 8-year-olds that unveiled the cover that there are a number of missing children and some adults in Washington, D.C., that the sex industry business has gotten where just in Washington, D.C., a small city of plantation size, but have got $100 million revenue. And we're screaming about girls over in Nigeria. And Obama wants to take a stand, and yes, oh, he's crying for the girls. But in his own backyard, this child has been missing, which the police bamboozled the investigation so that you can't find that child anywhere, any evidence of that poor little 8-year-old girl. And you have not heard that president say anything about the missing children within Washington, D.C., but yet he wanted to put the blinders on and have everybody over about Boko Harambe or whatever his name, Karambe or whatever, the boogeyman, which was a CIA tool that, you know, WikiLeaks exposed that, you know, this is a front, this is a fraud. And in a article that I was looking at yesterday said most of those girls are 30 or 40 years old. So the lie of saying that they were kidnapped from a school is not even sustained there. So, you know, they're just using that, like the brother said, as a pretense to get over to Nigeria to take over a stronghold of the oil like they did in Afghanistan and Iraq.
And we see these things happening, and there seem to be very little response from those of us who are in a pretty good position financially. And what I lean to now, and I'd like for Katie to articulate her position, which aspect of these obstacles you think is the greatest obstacle towards our advancement at this point in time? Is it more so class or race?
No, are you asking me or are you asking all of
Katie.
Us?
That's Katie, all of us. But I want Katie to respond first.
I'm here, Mr. Robinson. Repeat your question.
I'm saying, looking at all of these issues and problems that confront our people, right now many people get the illusion that it's all because of race. My question is, if we had to dissect our problems today, in terms of the two, which one you would say is the most dominant? In terms of aiding our oppression, is more based upon class or based upon race? Because we do have a lot of wealthy people among Africans throughout the world, and particularly U.S. But when we talk about these problems, if people do not fall under a particular type of upbringing, a particular type of well-being, seem like there's no concern even among us. So my question is, how do you analyze this issue of class and race as it relates to our people today?
I think first class and then race. I think that, unfortunately, even among people who are of color, once they have attained a certain level of income, they seem to generate and be comfortable with people who have the same level of income that they have. And after that, then that fades out. They say, well, you know what? My money is important, and I can use it. It makes me comfortable, and I'm in their circle, but I'm still a person of color. And when something happens that makes them uncomfortable, they say, you know what? I might be rich. I might be a millionaire. I might be a billionaire, but I'm still black. And it has to be something that happens to them personally before they can see that and never forget that. And that's unfortunate because the world is looking. And as the racist said, and he is a misconception, of course, but he did say that a lot of blacks don't help other blacks. And he might be delusional. He might be a narcissistic, but he's paying attention to the behavior of black people. He's of the concept that blacks are getting help from Jewish people. When the Jews are rich and they feel badly and they see something is happening wrong, they'll reach out and they'll give to the blacks. They'll loan to the blacks. But blacks don't help other blacks. That's his perception. That's his observation. And unfortunately, it appears as though a lot of blacks who have obtained wealth and have obtained a level of income are very comfortable in their setting as long as they're not having to deal with the issues of racism. They don't realize that society is looking at them still as a black person. We are not post-racial. Racism is still a part of everything. And it only comes to the light when somebody gets hurt, when someone is embarrassed, and all of a sudden they remember that, oh, yes, we need to talk about race again. We are never post-racial. I have lived long enough, thank God, that I have had a substantial amount of experience abroad and stateside. And your guest had talked about having the experience of living abroad in a military environment. That's a culture within a culture. I, too, know that culture. My children were born in a military hospital. That could only happen if their dad was a military person. I was a military wife. For 20-plus years. That's why I know that my son is still a target now. They know who we are, where we were, what we did, and how much we gave. So they have monitored this young man for years because they've monitored his parents for years. And now it's coming to the light. As I said before, it's not by accident. It's by design. Yes. The young people today, many of them have never experienced what I went through, having to sit in the back of the bus, white fountain, black fountain. You can't drink from that water fountain. You can't sit in the front of the bus. You have to know your place. You have to go to the back door, not the front door. Well, unfortunately, many people today, the young blacks today, in sports and music, have not had my experience. But nevertheless, they're still dealing with racism every day because white society never forgets who you are. And if you forget and pretend that you're something that you're not, then they have a way of rudely awakening you. So it's wise to always remember who you are and where you're from, not that you're secondary, because Africa, the mother country, is rich in mineral and resources, and it has been raped by white society. And the answers are in the books, but they don't want you to read, and they don't want you to talk to the older people, because they will tell you the truth, and you will not be caught off guard when you hear somebody come on the TV like Clive Bundy, or someone come on TV like Donald Sterling and say these things, it would not be a surprise to you, because it's always been there. It's not going away. So it's important for our people to understand 24/7 where you are, who you are, is not defined by white society. You have to be aware of who you are and where you are from your roots and from your gut. And if you don't know, then you need to ask somebody. Because we do have the power. And like the brother said, we do need to organize. Yes, we do. Because it's a misconception to think that we don't love, to think that we can't support, to think that we don't understand each other. Because we're one of the same. And it doesn't have anything to do with the degrees either. A master's degree I have, my son, a bachelor's degree, it doesn't make any difference. Because wisdom and knowledge is not defined by the kind of degrees that come from the college campus. Education has to do with what you see in everyday life and how you survive those balls that are thrown at you in the middle of the night. If you don't know how to recognize racism, how can you deal with it? Everything that shines is not gold. Because you live in a white neighborhood or drive a big car, doesn't mean they like you. Doesn't mean they respect you. And every now and then it slips up, and you hear it come out of the mouth of a man like Donald Trump. I thank him for saying what he did, because he's educating those people who have become oblivious. And he's speaking like who he is. He's a trained attorney. Can you imagine how many people he's done the service to? It's first class and then race. That's the way society has made it.
Okay. Odingo, where are you on that question?
Let me be consistent with the instruction I've learned from the AAPRP DC work study process, political education. So let me quote three books that if you're serious, you need to read on this issue. Okay? One is by, and all of my revolutionary Pan-Africanists, one is by Amilcar Cabral called Return to the Source, where he talks about class suicide, and in that defines class. Second one is by Osagyefo, the Redeemer, Kwame Nkrumah, in his book Class Struggle in Africa, where he's defined class. Third one actually is a book by my big ideological brother, Kwame Ture, Black Power, the latest edition with the afterthought, where he defined class. A lot of times when people say class, they go right to Marx. Way before there was a Marx, in African culture, it was defined and clear. It means the oppressed against the oppressor. That's the essence of class struggle. And that material condition of the oppressor out of Europe coming to sustain a growing capitalism going into Africa with a justification brought on racism. So, in other words, if you want to destroy racism, look at the class origin of it. Capitalism. You must destroy the material condition. A Ku Klux Klan Packerwood would not be racist if you take the power away from him. It would be very hard. He can be racist at his own demise. If you want to destroy racism, you must destroy capitalism. Ain't no other way around it. So the material condition, the class struggle, yes, produce racism. But Nkrumah says we have a race class struggle. If we want to put that in aspirations of where we need to go as a people, nation class struggle. The nation is the African nation to be, which includes African people on the continent and the diaspora, organized and focused and marching towards one goal, one aim, one destiny. It ain't got to be everybody. It just has to be a significant number. That's not even 50%. 30% of Africans moving to that way would destroy capitalism. So, yeah, it's a material condition. Class first. But when you think class, don't go to Marx. I ain't saying don't look at Marx. I'm saying go to Nkrumah first. And you'll get a clear, and go to John Henry Clark, who said the African was the first communist, meaning we could commune together as a people for the development, as Cedric DeRay would say, of our culture. And let me end with this. If you're serious, join an organization. If you're not, I'm at the point about to say, you full of it, because you're just talking. You're not joining no organization. You come to ARD every year. You go back. You treat it like some entertainment rock concert. You never join an organization. If you love your people, if you're serious, you see, I'm taking it up. Don't get into an organization, a revolutionary organization. And if you're really conscious, a revolutionary pan-African organization. I pray that God moves the fear out your heart, that you become organized. And far as I do concern, I have no doubt that these same youth that appear to be confused will be the same youth that march on the front lines to destroy capitalism. Praise God. Positive people, join an organization. Come to ALD, AARBGC. Board the revolution.
And Sabrina, where are you with this question of race and class?
Okay, I agree with the brother, and I'm glad he pointed on one key point in there, pan-Africanist. That is the main root of it all. And it's quite interesting. They went after Marcus Garvey. They went after Nkrumah and so many others. And I have to say here, re-educate yourself. Get your children, your generation, your kids, your older, the ones that don't know. Look at Hidden Colors 1. Look at Hidden Colors 2. Hidden Colors 2, I had to watch that thing 3 times for me absolutely to absorb it all, taken in there, because there's so much knowledge in there. And then, of course, that's coming in June 26th at the theater is Hidden Colors 3. So we should all be out there trying to see this and pass it on, you know, as much as possible, because there's so much wealth in everything that it covers in there, especially with Hidden Colors 2. That, you know, for me to even try to give words to address it, it would just be even minor. If you don't have it, haven't seen it, you can Google it, YouTube it, get your friendly bootlegger, blacklisted person, meaning, you know, to get the movies and all that stuff, or get it, you know, just reasonable, because they did not put that out there to say, oh, we want to make the money on this. They put that out there to re-educate the people, to know where we came from and where we need to be going forward in direction. And as far as organization, let it be one that is for the people, that uplifts the people, not taking advantage, as we know so many others have been, you know, with the advantage of an organization. I would say that. Because just don't join any organization or make any organization for yourself advantage, because unfortunately people are turning to be tribal, meaning they're only worried about their immediate family. And as with racism versus classism, the harder things go, they use the tool of racism. And I'm one of those that say, yes, there are some people that are beyond higher, where they're not making as much money as they want. We deem them, call it Illuminati and such like that. They're not making as much money, so they're expecting a lot of the millions of people to sacrifice and do without torture if necessary, just so that they can get the enjoyment of what they want, you know. And this is happening from country to country that has capitalism in place. So, yes, we have to look at what pan-Africanist views, but understanding what is in place, because what is in place is evil. It is totally evil. It used to be that, you know, it would be sustained to say that you wouldn't resort to things of what they're doing now with drones and massacring people and such like that. People would say something. People would do something. It would be embarrassed. They wouldn't even do it. Now they do it all over the world, like, you know, inexcusably. And people don't even bat an eye about it, you know, about it. Look at Somalia. They took when the people, the young youth people, took to fight for their land and their water, they're being called pirates. just to let the Dutch to have that land. And it's exactly what is with Nigeria. It's, yes, the U.S. wants to grab in there, but the, what is it called, Dutch Shell, who's trying to take advantage of the oils of, that is there, and so much. Currency does not mean anything. It is the oil revenues and such that seem to have the that they want to go after. Even with Russia, whether they're trying to make an argument with Russia, you know, with Ukraine, and that it's because of the oil reserves there, which they value over of paper currency. So, you know, unfortunately, as we suffer more, this is the means of where they're just getting ugly and vicious and enjoying it of how they go after people. And as those are that are without, then they use racism, you know, to excuse why they don't have it. Like now, pretty much in everything for capitalism in this country is in the Zionist power. You know, politically, there's known about around the world about the taking of organs. Yes, it does happen in the black market. This is where a lot of this missing is taking place. And then of where the sex trafficking, that is where the key money is at now. Even where the people say that they're trying to make revenue off of drugs, that is, yes, that is going on. But the main money that is being made around the world now is sex trafficking and organ transplanting, organ taking of thievery that is going on. And unfortunately, I'm not being prejudiced there, but guess who has had a role in there? Those that are the Zionists.
Yes, that's interesting. In terms of this question of looking at our communities, for example, you just mentioned something about people, organs being taken out of their bodies without their family's approval. And so today they still haven't found no one guilty of the little high school student who was in the high school in the gym, found dead with his organs taken out, and nobody knew how he got killed and how his organs got taken out, and no one been held responsible for his death. How do these kind of incidents go? How do these incidents go on and no one is held accountable? How do we continue to let this stuff to take place? Open question to anybody. I'm just raising it.
We Hello? Have to demand accountability. That is just what happened with Relisha Rudd, and where people are not letting that go because just to say as shortly as I can, this child was missing for more than a month. It was brought to the police of D.C., which happens to be of a woman named Lanier, who was brought up into the ranks by Chief Ramsey, who is now in charge of Philadelphia. There's a lot of problems with their police there in Philadelphia. And D.C. had the same problems, too. Well, she was trained in there, and a lot of people were wondering how this woman can get higher position than what and salary than what the mayor is. But basically of it is, even the D.C., Maryland and Virginia pointed out, hey, D.C., why didn't you do an Amber Alert? Well, you know, if you're saying this man and this woman that was associated with this missing child, the woman, the wife of the man that was with the missing child was dead, do you want us to put an Amber Alert? They said, oh, no, we don't need one now. So it took all the way from February till about the first of April when D.C. decided, oh, we'll do an Amber Alert. By then it was too late. Anybody knows if you do an Amber Alert for a man, woman, child, senior citizen or whatever, you got to do it within hours. They purposely didn't do it. And what this pulled off of the cover is that there is a business here getting all this money in here, but guess what? D.C. didn't want to touch it. So it asked the question, who is in power with all this money to make it where they don't want to touch it? They want to put blinders to it. So as it happens, unfortunately, like you just said, we're, you know, there in Atlanta, supposedly with Trayvon Martin, his organs were taken out. That's something that Dick Gregory has done a presentation about and spoke about that. That has not been noticed by a lot of people. But, you know, we've got to demand accountability on that, on there. You get what you demand. If you just say, oh, well, I'll yell and scream for a minute, they expect for us to yell and scream for a minute and then die down 2 or 3 months later, a forgotten issue for right then. It's just like we're not taking no that we can't get answers about what happened to Malcolm X's grandson. And then from what I understand, I'm going to say this, and I may not be correct in saying this, but it has not been known that I was told that his organs were taken by the time his body came back to the United States. Now, they've waffled away from that. But, however, when they had a sting about the organ taking, and in New Jersey, they found out that it was rabbis that were involved in it and other people that were involved in it. You can Google that as a YouTube and found when they did the raid on there and found in New Jersey. And a number of people were put in prison for that. But that just stopped just one angle of it. Apparently, if a person was to die and their organs are taken, the value of the organs are more valuable than the person. When they take in the actual organs out, that they can, on the black market, turn around and use in a financial way. So that is the most hideous thing as possible, that in order that what this world has resorted to get money is taking of people's organs. And so we have got to be tight watched on this with our families, with our youth, especially our youth, because those are the main ones that they're going after.
We'd like to let our audience know that we are commemorating African Liberation Day 2014, which will take place this weekend in Washington, D.C., May the 17th, at the Festival Center, located 1640 Columbia Road, Northwest. The time of the events will be from 2 to 5 p.m., and there also will be a special event on the Cuba 5 afterwards. We'd like to encourage everyone to go to this website where you can get more information on the upcoming African Liberation Day and to support its cause by going to www.a-aprp-gc.org. And for those who are listening to this program, we have our phone line open. We'd like to encourage you to call in to give your views and comments based upon the general theme and maybe some of the things that has been shared with you by dialing 323-679-0841. 323-679-0841. If you'd like to speak, make sure you hit 1. Moving forward, to Katie and Odingo, Al Gore recently made a statement in which he stated, "We must manage the African fertility." How do you interpret what was the significance of him going public with this?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, Odinga. First of all, my sister, you said a mouthful, and I'm sure you would love to read our text, PE Journal, which I'm sure you get that information from me. I'm not going to go into how you can get in touch with me. We can tell you, or the state can tell you. But let me say this. Demand is good, but demand without organization is at best an emotional desperation cry. If you want to make a demand, be organized. That's the only way demand can be met. Al Gore's statement is consistent. Listen to me well, public. Al Gore's statement is consistent with American domestic and foreign policy and the Foreign Relations Committee specific to National Memorandum Security Council number 46, which they took off the Internet because initially it said we must destroy the African masses, listen to me, public, particularly those organizations that emphasize revolutionary pan-Africanism. That tells you the whole solution right there. That tells you what you need to be about. It take the organization you can be about, what the enemy fears the most. That's what we need to be in the most. So Al Gore's statement is, I'm not surprised at all. And it came out of, watch this, Brzezinski, which was Obama's initial campaign advisor, because Obama ain't nothing but a puppet for the neocolonials, and Henry Kissinger. It's called National Memorandum Number 46. And I think, Brother Lee, you sent out something last week about another National Security Memorandum. So it's consistent. The only way to stop it, let me quote Marcus Garvey, when all else fails, conditions will force us to organize. Organize or perish. Make demands, all that's good. But if you're not in an organization, you're talking sugar, honey, iced tea, and you're perpetrating a fraud.
What do you make of Al Gore's statement, Katie? We must manage African fertility.
African? I'm sorry, brother. Say it again, please.
He made a statement, a public statement last week, Al Gore, a week and a half ago, where he made a statement in which he stated that we must control African fertility.
You know, that's an insult. That's an absolute insult. One of the things that a racist fears the most is a pregnant black woman. Because what she represents is bringing another life into the world. And they're all about eradicating as quickly as possible. And if they cannot discourage you or corrupt you through drugs or through crime or through sex, then they cease to shut you down. I don't have to tell you the history of having lots of black women in America who've gone through sterilization without permission. They've actually sterilized without permission. Because they really do not want to see another black child brought into this world. That's how deep racism is. Racism is an institution. It affects every part of your existence. Family, education, economics, government, everything that affects you has some strain of racism in it. So it doesn't surprise me at all. What's in your heart, he just verbalized what he was thinking. I don't have to tell you that. Anytime you seek to control the behavior pattern of another individual, what are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? I mean, it just coming to the light, we already know that if you cannot entertain them, then you're useless to them. They want to be entertained.
Amen.
You must be able to dance, sing, play ball, get the trophy, get the scholarship. And if you can't put money in their pocket, then what good are you?
Amen.
So you're just making, they're just making you an intellectual slave again. You see what I'm saying, don't you? It's playing out, isn't it? You know, your show is a platform to help those of us who understand, verbalize, and communicate. But beyond your show, mass media is reiterating over and over again because it's coming now from the mouth of the racists themselves. They are saying what we already know. You know, it's not about the fact that Donald Sterling, he's so oblivious that he used these black men to make him rich. He bought a team for a few million that now was projected to be worth billions. And he's saying, well, they've entertained me and they've made me rich, but I really don't care for them. We already know that. So Al Gore's statement is just another layer, which means that they're watching your sexuality. And if the child comes into the world, might have a black dad and a white mother, that child still considered black. Might have black daddy, a white mother, that child knows to identify as being black, because that's the way society sees it. That's the way America sees it forever. Yes, sir. Racism is an institution is by design. It's not by accident. We need to take care of our bodies, and we need to take care of ourselves. Keep in mind that they want your health. They want to see you not only dumbed down, but medicated. They'll love you to death through medication. They will overly medicate you. They'll give you so much medication, it'll burn out your liver and your kidneys. You won't be able to know what's going on. A pill for this and a pill for that. Yes, they do want the organs because that's another way for them to make money. If they can't get it off one way or another, if they can't get it off you when you're alive, then they'll certainly get it when you're dead. And they have no shame in their game. We need to be aware 24/7. Thank you for the question, Brother Lee.
Sabrina, do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
Well, maybe I'm not comprehending. When you said African fertility?
Yes.
I'll just say this, it's in danger because for the sister, what she just brought up and said, then we've got another thing that's in thanks to the Supreme Court that is put in place. And before I say this, you know, I have relatives that are homosexual, so I'm not saying this as far as to be anti-gay, anti-homosexual. But, however, 2014, there's a very serious problem when we are not addressing children, the needs of children, and for family. And where we have did, you know, basically in our society put at the helm in every city, every state, in the school system, on TV, in the sports, in everywhere where we have uplifted up the basically of having the education of homosexuals in the schools and the churches of saying that, you know, that no matter what type of religion, faith that you are, that you have to marry them or and such like that. I can see if there are unions, but to say that that has to take overall in a society and then to teach the those that are, I'm saying like kindergarten and such like that, to put as a curriculum in school, that is a very serious problem. So in that, looking at that, is where African fertility is in danger. Because if we have it just as what they say, and excluding those that have been, you know, adopted and such like that, where if it is where, you know, of families, where it is just, you know, of homosexual, who is going to produce the children?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so this is where when they put this in place all over in our system, this is not what they have thought of. Yes, everybody should have rights, human rights. But at the same time, when you're putting this as curriculum in your society and everywhere, and that so that even, you know, your toddler is miseducated to see the wrong thing, that they're going to turn and assume that they have to be that way when actually they cannot. I'm not saying that, you know, saying, oh, you know, of having a bias against of somebody choosing to be gay. But however, when your society, your community and everything that's all thrown out there, you don't even have a chance of even assume anything else. You're going to go along with the flow. And pretty much this is what I'm seeing as far as 2014, which is a serious problem. My question is where does Pan-Africanism play in this? And what role is in there? You know, and I myself, I used to be backed up with Career Nation fighting for those rights. But one important person told me Clarence Mitchell IV said to me this, and I had to rethink and look at really hard as it is now this time. When they fight for our rights, then we can fight for theirs. So basically is like what they, what's his name, Ruskin, Bernard Ruskin and such like that. Even with King saw that that was not the fight at that time for that. And then, of course, with him, he had some skeletons under, you know, under his coat. So, of course, King was not going to, you know, be involved at that time anyway. But, however, this is what has taken the majority of here. Now, with this Sterling and what happened with basketball and such like that, unfortunately, you know, most of the owners that of the teams are in the same frame of mind. I never forget what was a baseball team, and the lady that owned it was clearly racist. I think it was one in Ohio, Illinois, or such like that. She said he was far more worse than what he did. Yeah, far more worse. And she was she didn't have anything saying that she had to do any penalty or whatever. They just kept it moving. They just kept it with it moving. And now the latest thing of where they want to give high altitude as far as sports now is the ones that they can acknowledge of the gay athlete. So, you know, there's a serious problem here, you know. And we need to revisit this as far in such a way that, yes, that what is, oh, in other words, what I'm saying, we're exploiting against other people's rights in order to have that in place. It's like it's society says it's got to be either one, either one. You know, we're not able to have that. For like in Washington, D.C., the city has with the transplants, regentrification is, the children are not even allowed to play out in the park. But yet, the people can have their dogs pooping all over the parks and everything all over, you know, the parks within the city. And that you can't even go to Washington, D.C. As a matter of fact, probably even, you know, if you go to Malcolm X Park, Meridian Hill, you'll be seeing how there's poop all over the park and wherever it is, and where the youth are not even allowed to play soccer in the park. And so, you know, our values are misguided here. You know, this is one thing that is happening now in 2014. It's very misguided here. And which, you know, is of value here. Right now, if you're looking at what is in Babylon in the United States here, it seems that's the priority.
Okay, we're coming down to closing of this program. And when we think about African Liberation Day, we talk about the primacy of Africa. We know that Mother Africa is calling her children to come together and save her. Now, in terms of Africans born in the U.S., and outside of the U.S., but let's concentrate for U.S. since most of our audience is based in the U.S. at this point in time. What can Africans do inside of the U.S. to help change and foster a U.S. foreign policy that would be pro-Africa? We start with Brother Odinga. Go ahead. You can take the first stab at it. Give our people some ideas. How can we change U.S. foreign policy and make it become more responsible towards being pro-Africa?
I would say this. A lot of the things they need to do is already in our past, even the statute. Commended the sister for the statement. But I will suggest this to AAPRPGC, this AOD, this line. Zero toleration on not being in a revolutionary organization. Let's step it up a little bit more. Because, see, talk is cheap. We can say what we're upset with, what we want, all that's good. What you doing? When I talk to people, I ask them, they say, I'm upset. I say, what organization? I don't even ask them their name personally. I don't know your name. Tell me your organization. Then tell me. Because if you're in an organization, I know this may sound harsh. It's tight, but it's right. You ain't really serious, or you're confused. Get in an organization. If you're really serious, a revolutionary organization, if you're really on time and know what will really hurt the enemy and what will propel us forward as a people, a revolutionary pan-African organization. And that's why this thing, this year, by the APRGC is so significant. Let's call for the real revolutionary Grand Army to come forth and unite. The real ones will unite. Those who fake it will back off. Talk is cheap. The enemy don't talk. They organize. Organization will never defeat mobilization, but organization can sustain protracted mobilization a lot of ways, all the way to victory by an organized people. This year's ALD is significant. Get an organization. If you ain't, you really just talking trash. You ain't serious. Get in an organization. Get in a revolution organization. That's the primary. To quote and end with the great revolutionary panel, Kwame Ture, only the conscious, organized masses will defeat capitalism and move toward an inevitable victory, revolutionary pan-Africanism. The only question, what will your organized role be in this inevitability? Praise God, for the revolution, join an organization.
Cicada, has it given us some thought in terms of what could we do to change the U.S. prison foreign policy? Will it be more pro-African? If anything.
To be more proactive?
Pro-Africa.
I think that, I really do think that it is important to educate ourselves and to understand that it is important that the government recognize the fact that we have made a contribution to the existence of this country. Many of our foreparents have paid some heavy dues to bring things to where it is today. The history of our people have been distorted. Many of the leaders have made valuable contributions to the existence of what we are benefiting from today. And I think that we need to communicate with each other, to encourage each other, not to give up, not to be disheartened, and not to be discouraged. I really do think that without the necessary tools, which usually comes down to money, that we are handicapped about carrying out some of our best wishes. And I think that a lot of times, the resources are limited. So as long as we accept the mundane, day-to-day, tick attitude that there are no jobs, it's not true. There are jobs. They're just not giving them to the people who are most qualified.
More than that.
As you have seen played out in New Jersey. And all of that scandal about the bridge scandal, you don't see many blacks involved in that. And I know you have blacks in New Jersey, qualified people. But all of this Christie scandal, many of them, all of them are white. And whenever they leave the position just closes down. They don't hire anybody else. So they, for whatever reason, economics is critical as far as helping the African people in America and abroad to be able to make a valuable contribution, not only to take care of themselves and to carry out some of their goals, but we really do need to find a way to tap into the resources that are most beneficial to our existence, and that is the money.
Okay, Sabrina.
I would say this. I mentioned Hidden Colors 1, Hidden Colors 2, and currently coming out, I believe June 26th, is Hidden Colors 3, a wealth education of re-education of whatever we want to go forward and look at the past, but particularly going forward for pro-Africa. I also mentioned Dr. Umar Johnson. His Facebook site is Dr. Umar Itafunde Johnson. I would suggest joining, liking that, to keep advantage of what he's coming forth to bring toward the the future, and his current events, because basically he's all over the world now, and because like-minded people, including the youth, are attracted to him and what he wants to bring in place. Second, if possible, those that want to see their kids in a thriving situation for educations, such as those high school and younger. He's coming up with a school. He hopes to do more than one school in Philadelphia, the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey Academy. And then, of course, he has plans with the HBCU in Lawrenceville, Virginia, to take in place there. So we need to get on board here. Third, like you all have advocated, to come out for African Liberation Day. And we should be acknowledging this as a day not only just for this weekend or this month, but every day. And what we hear and put in place that we should be doing, our African brothers and sisters in the diaspora here in Latin America have been strongly on board. And so we need to be quite supportive of them as the U.S. is trying to put the hammer to them and basically, you know, advocate for them as best as we can, as well as we can with our brothers and sisters that are on the continent. So there was a lot that needs to be done. But also, you know, with the MOVE family, the MOVE organization is four generations strong. They have always schooled their children themselves, never had any problems whatever with four generations of children. That is the model. That is the right there. We can see the model of in place there, what they are doing and such like that. So there are, you know, many avenues. And, you know, for those that are, you know, Muslim, there are many, you know, sectors of Islam that are in place. The Moorish Temple that's in place, Van Rastafarian, the Naibenge has always been sustaining in one way of life. You know, many, you know, tithering here, going this way, of that, of a way of life. So there are many means of that where we can turn our ways to being pro-African. And then organization, if it is one pan-Africanist, uplifting, revolutionizing our people, because even the right wing are trying to call themselves revolutionary. And so, you know, we know people misuse that. So we have got to be prepared to re-educate people on what is the right way it should be, as Kwame Ture has taught us, as Marcus Garvey has taught us, as Malcolm X and many others have taught us, you know, that we haven't even brought up to name. We need to be re-educated of that right path that we should be going for ourselves, our community, our youth.
Okay, in closing, we'd like to let our listener audience know probably in the next 2 minutes you'll be losing us if you're online. But if you go to and call in at 323-679-0841, you can continue to hear this program. That 323-679-0841. We're going to go over a little bit today. And to hear all of our programs, you can always visit our archive at www.blogtalkradio.com/africa-on-the-move. So, Katie, can you give our people a understanding again about your son and what the Save Our Side Defense Fund is all about?
Yes, I can. Save Our Son Defense Fund is designed and organized to help support the defense of a young man who has been falsely charged with information that they said they gathered from a computer. If you are listening and if you are able to help, we ask you to send any donations to Save Our Sons Defense Fund, INC. It is a tax donation. Post Office Box 58, Inglewood, Colorado, 80151. Again, Save Our Sons Defense Fund, INC, Post Office Box 58, Inglewood, ENGLEWOOD, Colorado, 80151, or email us, Save Our Sons 2013@gmail.com, or call 720-499-5146. We are trying very hard to show that this young man does not deserve the kind of abuse and target that they are giving him and doing to him in Douglas County, Colorado. Your help would be greatly appreciated. We are fighting. We are daily asking for support. We understand, and we know that you know, that these things happen to young men with potential. He has never had a problem and has never caused a problem for law enforcement anyway, but we're fighting for his life right now. Thank you, Brother Lee.
Well, Deagle, your final thoughts, and why should he support African Liberation Day?
God bless the station, the people that call in. You're doing a good job. Support African Liberation Day by APRPGC. And unorganized people have never defeated an organized enemy. Zero tolerance on not being in a revenue organization. If you're upset in an organization or not, you're perpetrating a fraud. Get organized. Ready for the revolution.
And Sabrina, your final thoughts and your position on why they should support African Liberation Day this year.
Why to support it? Because so many do so in other countries. We would be stupid if we did not acknowledge it as best as we can in this country. And then I would say this, to find out with MOVE, the Free the MOVE 9 Facebook and Blogspot. To find out with the petition, please be out there signing it. Share it around with people. That's on change.org to John Kerry. This is the last day of it. We'll be coming up with another petition, but we also have a paper petition, which I'm going to be having people sign for the pilgrimage to Malcolm X commemoration program up in New York. And then also in Baltimore, if there's people in Baltimore, I'll be taking signatures with the event that Dick Gregory will be speaking with on Friday at Sojourner Douglas College in Baltimore City on Central Avenue. And then plus the text of the paper petition is on the Facebook site, Malcolm Chabez Memorial Page, Malcolm Chabez Memorial Page, where you can find the information that we have basically put together ever since we found out that he was killed May 9, 2013.
And Brother Odingo, information again, how to get in contact our attack.
Hello?
Can you give people information how can they contact our attack?
Yes. G-I-E-O-N ODINGA@gmail.com. GIDEOPODINGA@gmail.com. And that's how you get in touch right now with our tech journal, but we're about to change it to something more effective and not to one individual. Thank you. God bless. Again, all this is good, but it ain't an organization. It ain't going to get it, baby.
And Katie, last time for contact and numbers, how can they reach you?
We ask that you call us at 720-499-5146. or email saveoursons2013@gmail.com, or you can write to us, Save Our Sons Defense Fund, INC, Post Office Box 58, Inglewood, Colorado, 80151. Greatly appreciate. Thank you very much.
Okay, we came to an end, but yet still a beginning, where we must continue to struggle to move forever and backwards never. And we'd like to thank all those who have participated this evening, for our panelists, to our call-ins, and to our listening audience, for allowing Africa on the Move the opportunity to come to your homes this evening. As we stated earlier at the beginning of the program and throughout this series, we are commemorating this important African Liberation Day 2014, which will be held this Saturday, May 17, in Washington, D.C., at the Festival Center, located at 1640 Columbia Road, Northwest. The time of the events will be from 2 to 5. Then there will be a special event in D.C. dealing with the Cuban Five, in which we are also advocating people to attend. For more information, please go to the website www.aaprp-gc.org. This program, Africa on the Move, is a community project under the direction of the African Awareness Association. We'd like to thank all those that have supported us, and we are in the process of expanding this program to a weekly basis, a two-hour weekly basis. But we only can do this with your support. So if you have any contributions in terms of if you'd like to help us in this endeavor, please make all donations out to African Awareness Association, P.O. Box 4433, Richmond, Virginia, 23220. We also ask you to go to GC website and help financially support AID, because as you know, where there's economic dependency, there can be no freedom. We must begin to support our own work and our own movement. Until next time, brothers and sisters, let's continue to strive to go forward ever, backwards never, and remember, without information you cannot think, and without organization you cannot think clearly. So therefore, we too encourage you to join an organization that is fighting for your people. Thank you. Good night. This has been Africa on the Move.